All right, welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us here in the second segment, our member segment, together with Thomas Sheridan. We're talking about cultural Marxism, his Walpurgis Night, Volume 1, and of course, the Christian infiltration of Western society, the arise of the Abrahamic monotheistic virus into the West, and of course, how the eradication of our native European traditions have been so successful. And I wanted to try to get in a little closer to basically talk a little bit more about what you see as the dangers to us if this is something that we do not begin to kind of approach at this time, Thomas. I mean, how do you see the turning point towards our native traditions? How do we get our, you know, European brothers and sisters all around the world really get inspired about and excited about this kind of stuff? Because it seems like we're the furthest away possible from this. The onslaught and the attack on the idea that the West is basically behind everything to blame in the world. And of course, the West have been used, as you detailed before, and the people is, you know, not the main driving, you know, force behind this. But at a time like this, how do you see this? How do you see this go down? And if we don't turn our attention and direction towards this area, what is the outcome, do you think?
Well, the outcome is what they want in the short term. The outcome in the short term is they want to radicalize neo-Nazi groups around Europe to start trouble, and America and Canada and New Zealand and Australia and South Africa. And what they're going to set up intelligence service infiltration. It's already begun of these groups, of these neo-Nazi groups, with the two objectives. One, they want trouble so they can actually say, well, look, there you go. Anyone who actually, you know, cares about his country is a loony, he's a thug, he's a murderer, whatever. That's the first aspect of it. They start trouble and all this kind of thing. And the second aspect of it is they just want to destroy anything that actually makes people, Western people, feel good and have been doing this for a long time about themselves, about their culture. Now, they'll give you a tokenist twee kind of thing, a version of it. You know, in Ireland, we're still allowed to, you know, to enjoy Irish dancing, and, you know, as long as it's like a Hollywood kind of production with Michael Flatley and all this kind of thing. But at the same time, we're not allowed to, we don't hear about things like the Breton laws and anything like that, and anything really deep that actually could actually make people think there is different ways to live. The result will be your annihilation. That's what the result will be. Now, you don't have to, and the result of that, the way around that is you do not have to be a neo-Nazi thug in order to fight back. You do not have to be shave your head and put, like, you know, swastikas on. You don't have to do any of that stuff. What you do is you develop a sense of pride in your heritage, not in a dick waving, I'm better than you, or I'm better. See, they've been playing this for a long time. I'm better than you. But the idea that, like, wow, you know, the Visigoths, you know, they were pretty amazing. They kicked the shit out of Rome and they went down into Spain and they found two amazing cultures of the Spanish and the Portuguese. You know, they did amazing things, and, you know, it was really amazing. You know, and Vikings weren't these morons, thugs who landed at British and English and French and Irish set monasteries and raped and pillaged. They were tremendous seafarers who built amazing ships. And hey, guess what? Even if you're Irish like I am, you may be a Viking as well. Viking. Yeah. I'm from Dublin. I grew, you know, my heritage is the same as yours, Henry.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there we have a commonality. It's huge. It's huge. It's not small. It's massive. And, you know, the Gaelic people were all over Western Europe, from Britain all the way down to France and into northern Spain and northern Portugal. We've been everywhere. We've been mixing forever, together forever. But we kept our traditional cultures alive at the same time. And they're quite different to Teutonic, you know, Teutonic culture, you know, a folklore and ancient history is quite different than Gaelic. But the two of them are very compatible in their own kind of way as well, as was Nordic. But you do see as kind of they're different, but they're not. They're all worth celebrating because they're all phenomenally interesting. They all have produced, every last one of them have produced, you know, here's another one. The Egypt PSYOP, right? Now, yeah, mm-hmm. Egypt is fantastic. Yeah. Amazing. We're always taught, and whoever built those monuments down there, yeah, they deserve all the credit in the world. But Europeans did that. You know, look what, my God, look at the Vikings, for Christ's sake. They, it's a bad term, but look at them, look what they did. They go down and they invent the country of Russia by carrying boats down the Russian riverways and, you know, carrying them across land, and they invent the nation of Russia. They basically found just about all the cities in Ireland, including Dublin, which is like, you know, it is probably the premier Viking city to this day, and nobody actually not realized it. They traveled across to Iceland, had a very complex society in Iceland when Iceland was so remote and may as well have been the moon. They did the same in Greenland. And then, you know, just by chance, they hop over to the North Americas and they discover America long before this Freemason Columbus does.
Yeah.
And yet, what are we raised with? Some guy charging onto a beach, wielding a sword, looking for a virgin, killing these poor innocent monks. Now, when basically, let's look at this a different way. They were probably defending Europe against the monotheistic invasion. But that's never sold to us that way.
Yep.
And another thing too, and do we ever hear about Viking artistry? If you just go onto any of the websites or even go to the museums in Scandinavia, it's just astounding how technologically advanced they were in a very harsh climate, I might add, which also is one of the things that makes us this way. You know, it's not easy to live in Northern Europe. So you better have a bit of moxie and you better get your shit together and start thinking. And that also, adaptability to harsh climates creates technological, and this is the same for the Russians as well, technological advances. At the same time, these technological advances also create artistic genius.
Yeah.
It comes out of the same thing. And that's the way to sell it. That's the way to say to them, look, you know, you have a phenomenal heritage here. Instead of referring to yourself as someone who's of Judeo-Christian heritage, which you're not, unless you're from the Middle East, start referring to yourself as a European person of Nordic, Gaelic, and, you know, Viking descent or Teutonic descent or Visigoth if you're from, your ancestors came from Portugal and Spain.
Yeah.
Start calling yourself this. There's no harm in it. You're doing nothing wrong. And then enjoy it. Share it with your children. Share it with your friends. There's lots and lots of wonderful books out there in folklore and even films and documentaries and everything about it. And get out there and without turning into a kind of a hate thing, like we're better because we're Vikings, just say, no, we came from something pretty amazing. Anglo-Saxons. I mean, here's something I've been doing. I've been reading Beowulf every night before I go to sleep. I read one page of Beowulf, right?
Yeah.
Some super translations out there. And it actually changes your consciousness because you start using those Nordic terms, the Saxon terms, and using just thinking at how they looked at the world. I've been reading a lot of Icelandic sagas as well lately. They change your consciousness. Instead of seeing these people as crude stereotypes, you see them as just like us and a beautiful wisdom. Like in the Icelandic sagas, you have Ivar's tale, which is about a king who's basically psychoanalyzing one of his workers, a guy who's lost his girlfriend to his best friend, and he's depressed about it. And the king gives him all these kinds of offers to, you know, from having a ship, you know, having his own shipping line to like getting, you know, giving him a big job in his court to giving him some land. And in the end, the king realized that all this guy needs is to sit down and talk about his broken heart. We're talking about something that was written 1,000 years ago, 900 years before Sigmund Freud came along. we have this in our heritage. We have this, and it's never talked about. It's never brought up because they don't want us knowing this. They don't want this. And all these hot, bloody Hollywood films like that awful one, The Vikings, with I forget his name. That's Michael Douglas's father, Kirk Douglas.
Oh, yeah.
In it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, I thought it was great because it looked like a kind of a fun film. But when you watch it now, it's just shameless propaganda. Just shameless, and anyone who's involved with the Vikings is a sneaky traitor. You know, any of the Anglo-Saxons who are involved with the Vikings, they're sneaky traitors. And the reality is, they were probably trying to save their country from Christians.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, your ancestry is here. There's a connection between you and them. You know, this realization that you're a product of everything that they achieved and their hard work. I mean, that's something that has to. It has to click in you. You have it has to come to you, and you have to realize it. I mean, and with that, I think and understanding that, you know, you can't give this up. You can't let that go. That is a tremendous important step in this process. And I think that it's something that will actually begin to heal a very, very, very deep wound in the whole of Europe and the whole of European peoples, because of the way that we've been, as you say, mind control with the supplanting of a different archetypal, metaphysical, if you want to term it that, storyline, and it's been severed and hijacked. But the thing is that it's been, we have had way too long time with that. I mean, I think there is something to, you know, genetic memory or whatever you want to call that, in terms of how things are shaped in you. I mean, this is even some stuff that Jung talked about in terms of these archetypes, the psychological, you know, archetypes that are formulated through traditions and through, you know, heritage and retelling stories, etc. Something that's there and part of you. And I think that if we can reignite that again, if we can, you know, connect with that, we'll realize that it's just a very, very brief moment really in time that we've had the incursion of this different Semitic, you know, Middle Eastern mythology upon us. So I think it's a tremendous important step to go in that direction. And it also has to do with healing your guilt, I think, because the guilt aspect right now has to be one of the most fundamentally manipulative forces in the world. I mean, even marketeers call it the guilt dollar. They know that it's one of the strongest marketing points in the world. Basically, you get your kids to tell you what they want because they can play on your guilt, or even your guilt that you don't spend enough time with them, etc. I mean, they know about this, and this psychological warfare works in this direction. And I mean, just to kind of bridge that on and forward a little bit, I know that you wrote, for example, about something like, you know, Amnesty International and all these aid galas and everything else playing on this particular guilt of us in some way being not worthy of this, or that we're, you know, somehow haven't, you know, everyone else in somewhere else, you know, is worse off than you, and therefore all your focus needs to go there and not into your local region. I mean, look at what's happening in Europe and the West right now. Things are falling apart. There are people on our streets that don't have food or a place to live, and yet we continue to focus, you know, everywhere else all the time. What would you say to that, Thomas?
Oh, that white man's burden, that's been like one hell of a psyop they played, and people had nothing to do with it. You look at the height of the British Empire. At the height of the British Empire, say 1890, 1880, 1890, the poverty in London, in the like East End of London, and the poverty in the north of England was probably among the worst in Europe. At the center of the English people gained nothing. The British people gained nothing from the power of the British Empire. It all went into the elites. And this is the same story repeated all over again. But do the elites, just like the elites in Germany, basically fostered all the trouble there? Did they take any response? Was there any dukes or any kind of like German royalty at the Nuremberg trials or anywhere else? There never is. It's always they're useful idiots or else the people at the bottom who take that. Now, yes, African slavery, horrific, horrific, should be talked about. It's not my guilt because I had nothing to do with it. You had nothing to do with it, okay? Secondly, Irish were some of the biggest slaves going.
Yeah.
The Irish were basically, at one time after the Cromwellian wars, when Cromwell was here, and Cromwell won, and the parliamentarians defeated the Irish here, literally there was a population clean out of this country. There was something like one third of the population was removed in like 20 years, and they were sent to the Carolinas, the working tobacco plantations, and they were sent to, and they were slaves, and that's the end of it. There was nothing else to do. They were slaves, right. And they went to the Bahamas to work on sugar plantations and so on. And that's the end of it. And that was, and there were slaves in Europe in the 20th century. What about all the Italians who were brought up into Germany to work on the weapons factories for, the V weapons, Poles, white Poles, lots, you know, Slav. That's where the term slave comes from. It goes on. There's been, you know, it goes on. We're not responsible. Yes, we empathize. It's horrible what was done to African people when they were taken by the Arabs and by the, you know, the wealthy Europeans, the European elite, remember now, and brought to the Americas. And we should never forget what was done to those people. But even people in the southern states of the United States, only 1% of southerners actually own slaves. prior to the U.S. Civil War. 1%, they were the wealthiest of the wealthiest. And all the whites there had a standard of living that was equal to or lower than that of a slave. In fact, often lower.
Exactly. And I mean, there was a lot. I don't know the exact number right now. I watched another, we checked the sources on this too, by the way, but it was a tremendous amount of black slave owners actually in America as well at that time. And I was just amazed to see how many there were. And you realize that at the time, it had nothing to do with a racial distinction. This is something that, again, has been supplanted and used in hindsight, I believe, to create division, to create tension, to have something to have people bicker about, as opposed to looking at the true distinction where there was a financial motive in doing this. And that's the reason why it happened. I mean, again, it was like very good luck trying to see a European at that time run into the African bush and just throwing a net over people and dragging them out. That just didn't happen. There was an intricate plan between, you know, the Arabs who knew some of the African kings. They conquered and took some of their neighboring tribes as slaves. They were, you know, handled by the Arabs, who were given them to, in some cases, Jewish merchants who actually owned the slave ships that they were transported to. And then they were sold in various places around the Caribbean and, American continent and everything else. And the reason, what was the motive? It was financial interest. That's what it was. It wasn't like a vengeful thing against them because they were black or because they, you know, they hated them or whatever. This is a later, you know, incursion and a falsification of history that they're attempting to use today. And I think it would be really beneficial to people to actually realize this again, to actually begin to heal some of these wounds. Otherwise, we'll be manipulated by it and they will play us, you know, for thinking this way.
Yeah, it's just like I said in my first book, Puzzling People, just business. That brings, that makes you understand everything, that there's just a business to them and the humanity doesn't matter. And even the American Civil War, one of the greatest myths of history, if you want to talk about, you know, rewriting of history, that the American Civil War was fought between the North and the South over slavery.
Oh, yeah.
It was not.
No.
It was fought because of Southern states wanted to actually trade independently with European powers, particularly France. They wanted to trade independently. And it was all to do with complex issues regarding tariffs and taxations and all kinds of things. And it had nothing to do with slavery. The slavery issue was supplanted in there later on. In fact, as late as the final year of the American Civil War, you had Abraham Lincoln going into places like Indiana and you know, reassuring communities and cities that their sons were not going off to fight for the blacks. This is what was going on. And then suddenly it's the war's ending, and what was just a dirty, vicious war that cost a vast amount of lives over everything from, you know, railroad rights to build the Union Pacific Railroad. That was the real Union, by the way, that he was saving, the Union Pacific Railroad. All the and tariffs involving tobacco exports was suddenly brought into, like we said at the beginning, this moral, superficial, you know, emotional issues of, you know, saving the Africans. It had not, that was so far down the list of what Abraham Lincoln, and the only reason he actually, you know, he freed them at the end was because they were running out of troops for the Union Army.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, was it 600,000 American men died in this war? I mean, there's a reason also the Southerners call it the War of Northern Aggression. I mean, that's a Lana's actually going to do a show about that pretty soon here, about the Southern view of the war, and I really recommend people listen to that. I mean, it's the history here is just completely skewed, and I looked at the numbers here as well. As many as 4,000 black families in the South owned slaves. So how do people explain that then?
Yeah, and here's another one. You know where I learned all this first of all? You remember the black American comic Bill Cosby? He was in, when I was living in New York, a news story broke about him going into a school in Harlem, and he saw a picture of Abraham Lincoln on the wall of the school, and he told him to get he said, get that racist off the wall. And I was like, what was that all about? And I looked into it, and Bill Cosby, a very wise and intelligent man, had delivered this amazing speech about how the Civil War was not about, you know, freeing our people, and Abraham Lincoln didn't care, and all this kind of thing. And so I learned this from a black African-American male. So there you go. So that's who opened my consciousness to it.
It still amazes me. And there's a lot of things that we don't know. You have to be presented with certain evidence, sometimes even maybe in the right order, whatnot, you know, for things to click for you. In some cases, people will be resistant to something when they hear it because it's comfortable. Some cases, they've built their entire identity and everything else around a certain, you know, viewpoint. So I get that. It's difficult. It's challenging. It's, yeah, you know, all of that stuff, right? But all we can ask for is to people to have an open mind. And I always try to appeal to this kind of audience that we're having here as well. And I think most people get this already, of course. But nonetheless, why is it that people are so incredibly gullible when it comes to certain events of history? Because, I mean, we're in the alternative here. I mean, we're talking about things that are contrary to the main storyline, what the mainstream media is pushing. We're trying to, you know, rectify to a certain extent what actually happened, what, you know, investigate, look into it for yourself, really dig in there. Don't, you know, don't trust the first few talking heads that you hear talking about this kind of stuff. But I've noticed in some cases anyway, there is a kind of a innate resistance to some of this because it destroys that kind of comfortable, to a certain extent, I guess, worldview that people have built up. But all I'm trying to appeal to here is like, how is it that you can distrust basically anything else you see in the world today, but on certain of these key points, people just do not want to hear it. And they're absolutely, you know, convinced that the official narrative, the official story is just the way how things happen. And that has always amazed me, Thomas.
The whole comfort zone thing. And there's no growth in that. There's no evolution in that. And people are afraid, I'm not saying people, I'm just saying many people are afraid of personal evolution because they've made examples all through history of people who did just that. I mean, one of the books that woke me up back in the day, a long time ago now, was Alex Haley's biography of Malcolm X. And you see that what Malcolm X went through in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, is very similar to what the alternative movement is going through now. Two stages of waking up. And the first stage of waking up was that he joined the Nation of Islam. It got him out of trouble. He started to hate all white people. He made very inflammatory speeches, which were right for that time. Remember, there still were Jim Crow laws and stuff. So they were right for that time. He was making a justifiable argument and he was throwing it down. And then, you know, that brought him to the top of the Nation of Islam. Then he discovered that Elijah Muhammad was a total hypocrite, you know, a total nasty piece of work. He rejected that. And then he had a kind of a psychic breakdown again through his thing in Islam. And he decided that white people were not the cause of all the problems in the world. The class system was. And the class system knows no color. He says there are black people oppressing us. There's white people oppressing us. There's Jewish people oppressing us. There's Muslim people oppressing us. And so he went on and he said that. He paid an enormous price for that because he basically signed his death warrant when he broke his sheeple 2.0 programming, as I call it. You see, you're allowed to get, you know, they're so quick to call the mainstream, you know, so many people in this alternative movement are so quick to call someone a sheeple without realizing that, especially if they're like following someone like Russell Brand or something, and that they themselves are sheeple 2.0, okay?
Yeah.
Now, and you're still in the comfort zone. I'm sorry, you still are. But even if they're following Thomas Sheridan and no one else, they're still in 2.0. The idea is to break that and say, I don't need any kind of leader. I'll just have myself and I'll just look at things independently with no prejudices. And that's exactly what this show is about with tonight when you really think about it. No prejudice. And that is the hardest and the most dangerous step to take, because not only do you have the mainstream that hates your guts, but you also have the second layer of the control grid will hate you even more,
right?
Because they thought that they were able to draw the line in the sand and be comfortable there as sort of like radicals. And then they realize, and they don't want to be reminded, that there's a stage beyond that. I've seen some of these things mentioned on the Facebook, the Red Ice Facebook page, the same kind of things being brought out there. Very uncomfortable with the idea that, you know, okay, stop, don't go any further.
Right.
freedom of speech to mean anything, it's to mean you should be free to talk about anything. Like, there's things that I've seen on Red Ice that wasn't for me, okay, but it doesn't turn me off Red Ice, or it doesn't turn, or there's things that people like, other people I admire, like the UK column, I like that show. They have, there's things on that I don't agree with, mm-hmm. but those people I still think are doing great work.
Sure.
Like, let's be adults, for Christ's sake. Here we go again. I'm still programmed. Let's be adults and like cut people and see things in a holistic way that everybody has, you know, it's you know, you judge someone, and this is the cultural Marxist as well. You judge everyone on the sum total of all their worth in life, all the things done in life. The cultural Marxists are very good at destroying a person who may have spent their whole lives being a good, decent human being, and then one day does something stupid or tells a racist joke or something like that, and suddenly they are worse than Hitler. And their career is over, their lives are over, and they're basically demolished. Yet at the same time, too, they turn a blind eye to what Jimmy Savile and the rest of them were doing.
Yeah.
It's incredible to me, and this is a good one for waking people up, that you can have your whole career destroyed for an innocent remark that someone could be offended by in a racist or a homophobic way. But at the same time, those same people are turning a blind eye to what Jimmy Savile was doing at the BBC,
yeah,
which is what brings us back to Stephen Fry and Ben Elton and the rest of those politically correct comedians.
Yeah. It's a couple of things here. Truth, don't fear investigation. I mean, if there's something wrong with the picture, all right, we'll find it, right? And if it isn't, then what's the problem investigating it? I mean, you have to have the ability to ask the questions and allow to go through in that process of questioning for you to be able to, go through it. And I think that's a really important thing for people to remember, that just as you say, even though you might not agree with the reasoning behind it, that very process of just allowing this to play out and allowing you to investigate this is the most important thing, to be able to go through that, you know. But it seems to me, Thomas, that, you know, the double standards that we've discovered are remarkable. But it turns out, what I've seen anyway, is that the cultural Marxists are usually actually very comfortable by this kind of one way tolerance and everything, just as long as it's in the right direction, right? So they screamed to all hell, you know, when McCarthy was going and they were pointing out, you know, the Hollywood 10 and everything else, McCarthyism, right? And then now kind of that page has almost been turned, right? The cultural war has been fought. Now we have an ideological cultural Marxist view coming out through Hollywood. And so now they are going after people on the same manner, basically, who, if they're found out that they're conservatives. I mean, I looked a couple of articles the other day. People are, you know, fired from their jobs. They're, you know, completely economically destroyed because they're not on the same page as everyone else. So it's not that they disagree with the methods of McCarthy and McCarthyism. It's just that it wasn't directed in the right direction, right? And this is out of the playbook by Herbert Marcuse, one of the, you know, one of the Frankfurt School members, who wrote, repressive tolerance, the idea of one-way tolerance. You only, you hate everything that's on one end, and then you accept everything on the other. And of course, the plus side, the positive thing with this, is people will soon discover the double standards and realize that these people are just hypocrites. And that's when they begin to walk away from it, just like you did and just like I have.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being wrong. In fact, it's probably the most evolutionary thing you can do. You learn more from that than you will be for saying, yeah, I agree with him, or tell me what I need to believe. It's much better than that. It's like the tarot card in a tarot. It's better to have all your beliefs destroyed so you can rebuild from the rubble than actually be, you know, a false kind of icon of virtue that's basically built on bullshit. And that's you've come up with none of this yourself, and you're totally dependent on a dogma or a charter or a manifesto to actually point you in that direction. It's like these Christians who say, these Bible Belt Christians who say things like, if we didn't have the Bible, we wouldn't have my morality. Well, that says more about them than it says about the Bible or anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
There's something wrong with them, that they need a book to actually point them in the direction of morality. I mean, this is what we're dealing with. Now, the cultural Marxists have the word cult at the beginning, and there's a reason. They are a cult in themselves in a lot of ways. They function very much like a cult. Anyone who's ever been attacked by a cult like I have, you see that they go all out and they do everything to destroy you in every way they can. They will twist and distort and turn facts around. They will be ruthless in how they do it. And they will build, as you says, this truth is simple. but the lies are complex, and they will build an enormous straw man complex lies upon nothing, And this is what the cultural Marxists do. And you see that in feminism. You see now there's a radical aspect of feminism now where they have this thing called visual rape, where you, they can accuse someone of rape by just that's looking at them and raping them in their mind. I mean, this is Orwellian. This is This is the Anti-Sex League from 1984. Here we go.
Yeah.
We're there now. And this, again, is from the cultural Marxist thing. And, again, it's dividing things. You know, feminism are dividing men against women, where, you know, that's one more division. Now, show me how, where that has ever functioned in history in the past. You see, this creation of this new normal is what really gets to me. It doesn't. It doesn't serve anybody. But you now have, it's not even radical feminism. It's actually mainstream feminism, sadly enough,
yeah.
Where they say things like, we don't need men anymore. We can have vitro fertilization. And they have votes at American campus liberal colleges now where they, should we make men extinct? And even non-feminists are now like voting, you know, to have men made extinct because they're not necessary in the future. Women can do it all now. They can fly helicopter gone ships and they can have a baby without a man. This is, there it goes, guys. If you want to know why you should stand up against the cultural Marxism, well, men will be wiped off the face of the earth is one of the things. That's one of them. And I can tell you something, once they've done that, they'll start moving on the women.
Well, exactly. That's just it. They're using whatever group they can to break down the more, you know, the stronger one, I think that plan overall of breaking up the family and specifically kind of targeting the male has been tremendous, efficient and beneficial to their cause and their agenda. And unfortunately, a lot of these ideologues within these movements as well, of course, are being used and they really don't understand it. But there's so many, my gosh, there's so many processes to this of what actually, what must not happen within their own psyche when they're turning, on their own, fathers like this or brothers even. I mean, talk about severing them from the past that, again, you wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for the structure that had been in place for thousands of years. There was it's a darn good reason why, men became warriors and why they tried to protect their women, a couple of, 1,000 years ago or even less in some extent, of course. But just this idea that this structure arose because it was meant to be suppressive or something like that. I mean, how far removed can you be from not only human nature, but history and nature overall? I mean, this is, it's absurd when you begin to analyze it. And then you realize that, wait a minute, these people actually don't, they actually do not live in reality. They're so far disconnected from anything that's natural that I don't know if there's any way of actually reaching these people again and appeal to some kind of rationality and point to them and say, you're even being here and your own existence is predicated on the fact of everything that has happened in history. And now you're turning your back on that and resenting all of that. I mean, it's absurd, Thomas.
It's a lot of it has to do with education. A lot of it has to do with these academic professors. I mean, I don't know how it is in Sweden. I'm sure I bet it's the same. But like in Ireland, all the academic professors are all like, Fabian socialist types. They're all like signed up for the whole politically correct thing.
Yeah.
And they're total robots. I mean, they're totally mindless robots. And they're totally bought into the EU idea and the whole cultural Marxist idea, although they won't use those terms. And there's no sort of prosaic thinking towards anything. It's all, it's almost like if you want to graduate with a PhD, you must be a cultural Marxist. That's what it's come down to. And that's frightening in so many ways because, by the time you get to your PhD level, and especially if you've been bombarded by this cultural Marxist politically correct programming, you'll have your neural pathways rewired to the point where you won't be able to get out. You'll be like an extreme religious fanatic, like a Muslim, like an Islamic fanatic. You'll be like that.
Yeah.
You cannot be unprogrammed. Your neural path, you've been changed so incredibly from the person you were before you stepped into university. And this is this shows, people pay money to have that done to them, which is even more incredible now when you think about it. But look, just think of it that way. Show me anything good that comes out of that. It doesn't produce anything of value. It produces philosophies that are not organic, or they're not natural, or they're not based on anything other than scientific engineering. They produce nothing. Now, to entrench that in the population among the non-academics, of course, they use movies, they use TV, they use, you know, these obnoxious celebrity spokespeople to sit there and pontificate this kind of garbage, and people swallow it all up. I mean, you even look at like shows like The Simpsons, very, very funny. I mean, I have to say, I do think a lot of Simpsons episodes were very, very funny. But ultimately, Homer is the destruction of the male.
Yeah.
That's basically what Homer Simpson, there's one other awful show, Family Guy, the father in that. That's all about the destruction of the father. That's all that is. The household doesn't, and there's always a strong female in the family, like Lisa Simpson, and she's the voice of reason, an 8-year-old girl, you know.
Yeah.
there's several episodes of, there's actually one episode of The Simpsons that, you know, the back in the day actually started to make me say, there's an agenda on this show, where she basically becomes enamored by a school teacher played by Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, I remember that
one. Becomes
her
real father.
Yeah.
And he's relegated to the level of a buffoon. And the school teacher, he's a substitute teacher. He leaves town, and she just comes to the realization after she gives the school teacher a hug she would never give her father, that she'll just have to tolerate Homer. Yeah, he's stupid, but he doesn't beat my mother up, and he's useless. He's a useless man, you know, buffoon. But you know, he'll keep me alive. He'll put food on the table until I can get into Sarah Lawrence University and you know, start doing dissertations on what a genius Yoko Ono was.
Oh man, yeah, it's remarkable. I remember that episode too, actually, and it's it's basically the highest of achievement is the Marxist educated professor, you know, who can like give everything. I remember Lisa Simpson, she's like advocating for like fluoridated drinking fountains in the show and all this kind of stuff too. It's like all this complete garbage and nonsense. But I mean, what are you going to do when, I mean, people are believe that there's, for example, no biological distinction between men and women, you know? It's like, we're talking about people who do not see reality. And it's like, as you said, they're so far into the programmed motive that it's like, I guess they just have to walk through it and get disillusioned. I guess what I'm fearing in that process is that so many people are suckered into it, that it's actually something that managed to completely destroy it. I mean, some days I feel we're standing on the brink of complete collapse in some of our European countries here because of things, how things have been turned upside down. And I mean, part of me is like, okay, collapse is a good thing. It means we can actually try to rebuild something after that's done. Another part of me is like, no, why should we do that? Why should we, you know, give up what is to a certain extent and what we've fought for? And if we don't fight for it, it might just get worse and worse and worse. Where are you on that page, Thomas?
Well, the darkness is so dark at times. I do sometimes but think that, like the Daily Telegraph in England yesterday released a bombshell that last July, a bunch of academics in Cambridge, of course, Cambridge in England, the center of this rebuilding of society through social cultural Marxism, had a conference on pedophilia, in which they said that pedophilia is normal and natural for adult males.
Right.
And that childhood innocence, wait and hear this one, that childhood innocence, that the innocence of child is a completely unnatural state that was invented by people and imposed upon children.
Oh man.
This is the kind of lunatics we're dealing with. This is how you go into these social research labs in Cambridge, and this is exactly the conversations. If this is what they're public about, what are they talking about behind closed doors? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
But however, they often roll the dice sometimes too early, and that's a classic example of it. They just go too far that they show themselves up for what they are, and then there's a good sort of like there's a kind of a good kind of public visceral reaction to that, and then you know they give them some sports event or some TV show and they forget about it. That's the problem.
Yeah,
this is why we have to. You know, you have to tell people to stop watching television. That's just the end of it. That brings us back to the programming, show entertainment, and movies and everything.
I mean, that's so strong, Thomas. And I mean, I think that to a large extent, that's also why a lot of people by default, you know, try to save the grace of someone like Russell Brand. I mean, sure, they'll listen to some of his mumbo jumbo about spiritualism and, you know, yada yada consciousness, and then weaved into that, you can put whatever communist message you want, and people swallow it, unfortunately. But nonetheless, you have an association of someone who's in entertainment. They maybe made him laugh. They've seen, you know, him in some TV shows and some of the movies and stuff like that. And despite then people being hopefully on the page of where they're trying to kind of, you know, awaken and realize how these, you know, how entertainment is being used as a weapon, goes back into that, you know, knee-jerk reaction and goes into defense mode as soon as you begin to, you know, challenge some of these people. So the movie industry, the entertainment is one, even people who don't watch it, I've noticed as well, to a certain extent, are still very much repeaters of the same message. And I don't know if that's just because they're watching, you know, other kinds of media, but the fact is that that's something where good people have to get into. We have to have our own movies made. We have to have our own entertainment. We have to have this is we have to have a counterattack from the artist's point of view, the artistic process of getting into this kind of stuff. Where are those movie makers? I mean, I'm amazed that we haven't had a startup of more independent filmmakers at this stage that are beginning and seeking to challenge some of it. I mean, we see it from a media point of view with the web and everything, but not on the movies quite yet. What do you think it will take to get people directed in this area? Of course, funds is a big one, but something else, do you think?
Yeah, don't go to film school. That's another.
Yeah.
Because film school, you'll be indoctrinated just like art school, just like fashion college. You'll be indoctrinated with the cultural Marxist programming. So don't go to film school. And we live in an age where technology is so available that if you are anyway artistic, you can actually make a film and get it out there without having to go through the cultural Marxist filter. I'm actually surprised by that one too as well. I thought we'd have like a lot of kind of, you know, interesting, and not just documentaries, but actually dramas and so forth made by people in this scene.
Yeah.
We've been very slow on that uptake. We're still too much dependent on them to deliver that. That's one thing we have to really work on. So if you're listening for solutions on this show, people are listening to that. That's one. If you're a filmmaker and you tell stories, well, here's your opportunity. You know, people like myself, and I'm sure Red Ice will help you to get the promo you need if you deliver a good, honest product.
That's right.
And that's what we're all here for. We're here to support one another.
Yeah.
And that's great. I mean, they're very good at it. I mean, Spike Lee has made some super films from his angle as an African-American filmmaker, which are all well worth watching. And he does have a go at the cultural Marxists in a lot of his films like Do the Right Thing and Malcolm X. And that's cool. That's great. And, you know, so African-Americans have been on the uptake and managed to, squeeze their way into Hollywood. We can do the same without Hollywood now. He did it at a time he needed their money. We don't need it now. We don't know. The BBC, the rest, and they're all, we have to put them out of business. Entertainment, big time. Comedians. There are a few. Aidan Killian is one here in Ireland who's doing it, and there's others. That's a big one because they've been very good with comedy. They have used the Ben Eltons and the Stephen Fry's, and as we said, like the Simpsons. They've used comedy in a very good way to push the cultural agenda, that their own agenda. And you can see the power of a good laugh in actually bringing you around. Unfortunately, we haven't in this movement yet, although I plan to actually do something about that in the future, yet bring the comedy thing to be a weapon on our side, because it is a culture war ultimately.
Yeah.
And we can be really clever and good with that without being, you know, nasty or hateful. You can do it in funny kind of ways. And we need that. We need people with character. You know, it's so easy to do this, to make comedy sketches that are genuinely funny, that could be based on these kinds of ideas that we're talking about now. They don't have to be like nasty or attacking anyone. They can just be like witty quips. This movement badly needs an Oscar Wilde or something like that. It's that kind of thing. It's not that difficult to take them down. All we have to do is look at, well, it is difficult, but it's not impossible. All we have to do is look at what they've done to us, their weapons, and then use them back.
Yeah.
Simple. Yeah. They've been very good at this. And how we'll see this is we're stealing back what they came up with. We're taking it back. Great. Easy. So, okay, thank you, Frankfurt School. You gave us the weapons to fight back. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And that's the way we can do it. And that's the way to do it. It's a culture war. This war, you see, we've been talking about this on in this scene for years now, since about 2008, six or seven, whenever this whole thing's really kicked off. We've talked, we've looked. Now it's time to move that into a cultural sense. It's no use sitting there sharing YouTube videos about this, that, and the other forever. It's now time to move to the next level. We have to develop our own true media, and that means comedy, art. There's quite a few hip-hop artists, again, are doing this kind of thing, and a few other people in different bands. Move it to the next level, because we can do it. We can do it, and we can create a whole culture that exists next to theirs. So you can actually go through life listening to comedy, listening to rock music, listening to pop music, reading literature, and watching documentaries and going to websites like yours and mine and reading our books, and not have to do the mainstream thing.
Yeah.
That's ideally what we need to do. We ideally need to create a true alternative media that's also has all the stuff that can put the spell on the people in the mainstream who will swing them over to our side. I think that's the ultimate solution. And I have a belief we'll get there. I really do. I'm not just saying this out of bravado or anything like that. I know there's enough talented people in this movement and a lot of younger people coming up that we can do this. All we need now is to take that leap.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Entertainment, you know, with a good and sound message. I mean, I think we're going to see some of this kind of popping up here in the next 10 years or so. Something that's going to try to take a stab at some of this other stuff that we've been talking about. I mean, because it is very much about creating the memes and controlling the story or directing it, guiding it, really. And I mean, there's so much to do and elaborate on within this. So just ridicule, as you said, how silly everything is in our times right now. Show how stupid everything is. And there are a couple of people out there doing this. I mean, Joy Camp is doing this. Ramsey Paul is doing this from his perspective. And I encourage all of that. It's great stuff. We need more people doing it. We need more. And where are the people there are people with money out there and budgets and everything. And I'm hoping that something like that could also come into it. And I'm talking about people who are on this page and genuinely, you know, interested in actually trying to halt the process of the downward spiral and the destruction that we're seeing right now. So, I mean, I think that even would be an area where people could make a lot of money in eventually. Not that that's the main goal or anything like that, but there's nothing wrong with having an incentive to it. The very fact that this is driven, of course, by our interest to basically try to, you know, counteract the opposite side is the most important thing of it, of course. You know, but at the same time, a whole new field, a whole new movie industry and everything else. I think that there's some tremendous opportunities actually within this, Thomas.
Yeah, we can co-opt this. We can co-opt Hollywood too as well. There could be people in Hollywood who are a lot of money who've gone through some kind of public witch hunter, public kangaroo court, because they were caught saying some kind of comment that was perceived as racist, or some celebrity or rock star with lots of money who may have been accused of a false rape by a feminist or something, or attacked by feminists. If we can get those people to actually be almost like investors in our scene, because we can fight the battle here for them that they can't do in Hollywood. Yeah. And there's enough of them out there, and it's been going on for a long time, because like you said, it's just like McCarthyism. And I can tell you for a fact, I don't even have to know their names, but there are people within rock and roll, within Hollywood, who are just as disgusted by this as we are, but they're trying to keep their careers alive.
Yeah.
But these people have lots of money, and if we can approach these people and like get them to like help us with our things and everything, from fluoride, you know, everything. I'm not just talking about like cultural Marxism, but everything.
Yeah.
And they can help us. They're out there. I know they are. And this is why it's very important for us to present a very good face to the world, to look positive when we're sharing this information, to have a smile on our face, to be cordial and to be respectful, and to not become from a place of hostility, not for any new age reason, but because it genuinely puts people off. And we will, I have no doubt one day that someone will come up, and like you said, in the next 10 years, some young people in this scene will come up and they'll have an idea, and some Hollywood director who's disgusted by what he's seeing around him. Maybe he's been handed it. Maybe he's seen something behind the scenes or been handed a script that was, trying to, tell him to make a movie about like how pedophilia is beautiful or something. And he's, and he looks at his wife and kids and he said, fuck it, I've had enough. They, those people do exist and they are out there and we have to find them. And this is how we'll win this. We have, it's as much a battle of hearts as it is of minds.
Well, exactly. I mean, for Christ's sake, take charge and lead for one. We've been passive for way too long. I mean, it's time for everybody to grow up and stop being in this mode of just, getting programmed by everyone else and everything else all the time. I mean, and it's so much that is incorporated into this. And I think a lot of people understand this that are kind of on the similar page here when it comes to, having a healthy mind and a body of trying to get well, I mean, there's way too many. I know specifically this in Sweden, but I think it's true in England and many other European countries as well, America too, perhaps. But just, these guys and girls are like, they're binge drinking on the weekends. They're just completely strung out. They need to get their shit straight, and take charge and lead and take that responsibility and step up to the plate and say, we are getting challenged here. We are getting squeezed out on every level you can imagine, from the food to the clothes we wear on our backs. It's like everything is slowly toxifying you. It's poisoning you. It's screwing up your hormones. It's just, it's causing you to be not a normal human being. And I think all of these things contribute. And if you come to this realization and try to stand up for that and try to realize that, no, you know what? I'm not going to wait and sit around anymore and wait for someone else to do it. I'm going to take charge. I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to try to make it as best as possible. I'm going to become, in that regard, not perhaps a role model, but lead by example and show that you can do this stuff. And when you do this, other people will follow you and this will spread outwardly. It's like we have to try to awaken the spirit in some way and appeal to people that it's time you better do something, or this is going to be too late.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It is time. This is it. It's not backs against the wall quite yet, but they've definitely shown their intent. I mean, they've definitely shown what they want to do with us. It's as clear as day. However, I don't believe that there's ever going to be a mass awakening, but I do believe that things will get better because I'm seeing a mass revulsion. The other day, they had this like ridiculous citizenship ceremony in Dublin where they had 3,000 immigrants who were all made Irish citizens on the same day. And they had it in the National Convention Centre in Dublin. Now, right before the National Convention Centre in Dublin is a large old bridge. It was an old like lift bridge that used to let ships from the river into the canals. And somebody had painted on it population replacement program. That's all that was written the night before the... Well, the Irish media covered this as this disgusting racist attack. No race was mentioned. No immigrants were. It said population replacement center or something like that.
Yeah.
If you look at the comments on every single Irish newspaper, all of them, I'm not joking, all of them were like, that's true. That's exactly what it is. It's not racist. Nobody said it was against Africans or Muslims or anyone else. It just said it's a population replacement. Mm-hmm. They know Irish people are aging. A lot of young Irish people are having less kids. Quite a few have left the country because of the economic problems.
Yeah.
There's still a need for jobs here, and they're bringing in people from, and quite quickly they're rushing up their citizenship, which is very suspicious.
Yeah, of course.
Very suspicious. There used to be a long wait to become a citizen here. Now they're rushing them into it. They can't wait to make them citizens. Then they're actually solving the illegal immigration problem here, quote unquote, solving the problem by making them citizens.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like in the US too.
Not patrolling the borders, The Department of Defense here just bought two brand new warships, two like state of the art warships for billions. They should be patrolling the borders looking for these immigrant boats,
yeah,
and then saying to the people, no offense, but we're gonna have to take it back home.
That's right,
to the last port of entry.
Yeah.
No, they're not doing that at all. They're protecting EU fisheries. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so, and Irish taxpayers still have to pay for the boats. So, this kind of rubbish goes on. But it was heartening for me to see people say this, and then the occasional cultural Marxist jumping on and saying, of course it's racist, of course, and then trying to stoke up the people to make them say things, and people saying on the comments, you're not going to make me go there. You're not going to make me. I have nothing against, you know, half the people I work with are immigrants. They're all nice people, but you're not going to make me. You're not going to put me into that position. So it's almost like the PSYOP is falling apart at the very margins for them. It is. And the same thing with the paedophilia thing in England, where they tried. A lot of people are saying, what was Jimmy Savile's connection to the royal family? Why was it so close? And what had they got to do with this? And this is the main comment on all the stories about Jimmy Savile. And people are really, this Jimmy Savile one, from day one, I knew this was the one we could take them down with big time, particularly in the UK, but it has repercussions everywhere. Yeah, I've done a lot of investigation into the Savile story, and I actually believe that Savile was a serial killer. He shows all the traits of a serial killer. And I was ridiculed for the last 6 months for bringing this up. There's some of the comments on my YouTube channel are similar to the backlash I got from Russell Brand, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. They don't frighten me, these people. I don't care. And the other day, it comes out that Savile is probably involved in at least one murder.
Wow.
He's taken the glass eyeballs out of patients. He was had dead bodies. He was having sex with and having them made into rings.
Oh my God.
He is a Clive Barker level psychopath killer. And suddenly they all go very quiet. They don't want to talk to me. You know, suddenly I go from being an idiot who has no proof to silence. So you shut them up. You shut them up by proving them wrong. And so you must make sure that when you go into this stuff, that your argument is bulletproof and cast iron. So you have to have very good, you know, backup data to get you there. And you'll win respect that way. And I've no doubt that this will all come out. They're trying frantically now. They're doing everything to try and stop people from asking, what's Savile got to do with the royal family? And what was how about this body that was found on the grounds of like some palace in England, and Savile was around the area? What was, you know, blah, 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 and all this kind of thing. And they can't shut it down. Now, they're going to try and whip out a diversion. Cameron has been in the UK, the Prime Minister, has been going on lately a lot about the threats of these killer viruses out of the blue all of a sudden. And that's obviously a distraction thing. And they're not falling for that either. So I see a lot of hope, a lot of cynicism, and those margins. You forget the cultural Marxists who are all in the unit. They're gone. They're finished, right? But on the cultural margins, once again, the ordinary people are the ones that are waking up, and they're looking, and they're not being fooled, and the fluoride isn't as working quite as well as it used to, and so on. So this is a show. If anything we can say about this show tonight is it's a positive show. I see, yes, it's crap. Yes, it's depressing. Yes, it's dark. But I don't see hopelessness. Quite the contrary. I see, you know, I see tools, abilities, and information, and the power to overcome this that our parents and grandparents didn't have when they were actually, you know, complete slaves to socialism.
Well, exactly, indeed. I believe the truth will be known in due time. I mean, and I have to just reemphasize your point that you said about the press there as well. I mean, I see this too almost every time now. The press is relentlessly focusing on the same issues with the same perspective always. The press is hammering the same points, and they're doing, I mean, it's an incredible lockstep. And someone even released another kind of expose on how some of these stories spread from the bigger papers to the small kind of local papers in Sweden. There was like this one press release that occurred, and then they showed exactly how they were released in the same manner to on all of these different things. It was like, here is the meme. This is what you should think. I don't remember exactly what the story was about now, but nonetheless, it was just as there was like zero reporting. There was zero journalism in it. It was just a clear cut release from Propaganda Central, you know. But when you actually look at the comments, just as you said, you can actually see that a lot of people are getting this now. They're actually seeing the agenda. They're smart. They're funny in the way that they're pointing out the ridiculousness of the agenda that's being pushed. And I'm actually really encouraged when I see that. And then you realize that, oh, great, it's these people who actually, they've gone to create their own websites. They've gone to have their own, you know, news coverage, you know, if it's a radio show or video blog, or if it's just articles, what have you, or all of it. And this there is a reasoning why the mainstream media is completely just falling apart and collapsing right now too, because people know it's not true, and a lot of the people go there to see what the narrative is, to see what the agenda is that they're pushing, so that they can, you know, expose it and break it down. So I'm really encouraged about the direction we're going in right now.
Yeah, and the only reason Facebook had that huge psychological experiment recently is because they're scared shitless. End of story.
Yeah,
they're seeing Facebook pages, and they're not happy about the vast numbers of people who are not posting pictures of their dinner, and not and sharing cat videos constantly, even though cats are cool. They're not doing that. They're talking about the kind of things that we were talking about 7-8 years ago. They're not happy about this, and that's why Facebook runs these things. They're coming from fear. They're afraid. They're scared shitless, and good. I want you to be scared. I want them to be scared shitless. I want them to be fearful, because every time they run a new psychological experiment, that's absolutely proof that we have them on the run.
All right, very good. We're quickly approaching the end of our segment here, Thomas, but it's been very nice having you back. Thank you so much for the update from the Thomas Sheridan perspective. It's always great to talk to you, Thomas, and it's please keep up the good work and everything you're doing. Give us your details again about the website and everything else, and if you have something new and upcoming you'd like to tell us about.
Yeah, and likewise, thank you to yourself and Red Ice and all your team there for like you said, being the beacon of sanity, because it's brought a lot of people to sanity. And you keep up the good fight. We all do it. There's lots of reasons for us to stick here at that. Now, yeah. My website is thomassheridanarts.com. My new book is called Valpurgis Night. I'm sure Red Eyes will have a link below to where people who want to buy that
can
get it. And I've specifically made this a never for Kindle book. It will never be destroyed by any kind of script of code. I'm never going to release it in digital format. It'll be paperback. Sorry, we don't like that. Tough shit. That's the way it is for me from now on. And another thing too is I've got some speaking dates in England coming up in September. I was over there at the AV5 event back there in the summer, and it was a phenomenal, another one that just made me feel amazing. Such lovely people from all different walks of life there. And a lot of, middle class, straight up people who are now on our side. So, again, that's going to be great too as well. So that's basically it. I have loads of plans in the work, and my main focus now is to be a Gaelic Viking storyteller who relays the sagas to the people so they can actually understand the world without some kind of academic filter. I'd be very happy to do that for the rest of my life if that's all I was to do.
Well, that's a very noble cause, and it's one we desperately need right now. So please do, Thomas. Very good. The website again, then, thomassheridanarts.com. Check out Valpurgis Night Volume 1 and everything else that he has on there for you as well. We'll have the links up on redicecreations.com and redicemembers.com. Thanks, Thomas, so much. We'll speak to you soon. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Henrik, and all the best.
We have some great Radio 314 programs with Lana queued up. First one this Wednesday, and then the next one following Wednesday. On this Friday, we have Kyle Hunt with us on Red Ice Radio. After this, Dan Rayner and many more. Thank you guys and gals for listening, and of course for being members. My thanks to Frederick, Lana, Elizabeth, and John. Please take good care of yourself, stay fit, stay sharp, and if you're in the Northern Hemisphere like we are, don't forget to enjoy summer while it's here. All right, we'll talk to you in just a few days. Bye-bye.